This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Michael Pollan is a journalist who has focused on food, specifically on the foods we eat, which are readily available in what he calls the treacherous landscape of the American supermarket. He refers to them that way because he says much of the food found on their shelves isn't food. Instead, those shelves are filled with what he calls edible food-like substances, or processed foods. That assessment got the attention of a lot of people, among them a Matthew's mom, who decided to put her family on a diet, a real food diet. She embarked on an experiment to see if she could feed her family real food for 100 days. Well, she succeeded, and that success has brought her national attention, because not only did she blog about her experiment that brought her an audience of millions, she published a New York Times best-selling book about it, 100 Days of Real Food. It explains her journey, her family's reaction, and it contains recipes for real food dishes that you, as a real person, can make. That Matthew's mom is Lisa Leek, and she joins us in our Spirit Square studio for the hour. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this is your first live radio interview. You've done a bunch of them on the telephone, but never in a studio with a human being.
Exactly. Well, so I appreciate you having me here.
This is pretty scary stuff. And I'll make it more so as we go. I'm just kidding. Now, I know that Michael Pollan's message about food was your inspiration, but how did you come across what, because he's been on this show a couple of times, how did you come across what he was saying about food? And I know you didn't hear it here because you don't listen to us.
Well, I do sometimes, and my husband has it on, but I told you too much before the interview started. So it was actually, I heard Michael Pollan on an interview with Oprah, and so this is a few years ago before her show ended back in 2010, and on that segment they were talking about where our food comes from, and I just realized I had no idea. So it was like a train wreck where you want to look away, but once you know this information, you just can't forget about it.
Yeah. What was it about his message and what he had to say that day? And I know you went out and got his book, what he says in his book. And he's been on this program too. So I mean, what was it about what his message that so resonated with
well,
you?
Well, I thought, you know, what he was talking about just made so much sense. So it was really just common sense. And in his key message, and you know, which is similar to one of my key messages as well, is to read the ingredients of the foods, the packaged foods that you're purchasing. Whereas I think as Americans, we're accustomed to looking at the nutrition facts label. And I would look at that sometimes, although I wasn't quite sure what I was even trying to determine. But he says if you read the ingredients, you can see, you know, what the food is made of and how processed it is. And I realized, gosh, I never even have looked at that. And then once you start looking at that, it's pretty scary. I mean, I immediately raided my pantry.
Well, you do assume that the stuff on the shelves in the grocery store is not going to be bad for you. If it's within its date of use by date, that it's going to be okay. And I was having done the preparation for this conversation yesterday. I got up this morning and I got my box of cereal out.
Oh, what kind of cereal?
I'm not going to say, because on the back of the cereal, it talks about how you should start your day every day with a healthy breakfast. And then I thought, I wonder if this is really healthy, because you say that you just took them at their word, and then you started reading the package ingredients.
Exactly. You have to know. I mean, they're out to make a buck, these food companies. And I also think just in general, so many different people define healthy in so many different ways. So the way I define it is might be very different than, you know, what the cereal company or, you know, somebody else might think of it.
Yeah, because the back of the box has this very nice, smiling, happy family of four. Could have been your family. It looks just like the picture on the cover of your book, as a matter of fact. So you'd think, well, they're eating this cereal, so they're healthy. I'll look just like that. And that's not necessarily true. You were born and raised, I think, in Tennessee?
Yes.
By Midwestern parents who did not think about where their food came from. My parents never thought about it because they
You trust the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Your husband, on the other hand, grew up, at least in the first couple of years of his life, on what you would describe as a hippie commune
in
Oregon. And they knew where their food came from because it came from the front yard.
Yes. They milked their own cows. They got their honey from their own bees. They were grinding their own wheat. It was very fresh and wholesome.
Now, did they do that because they were thinking, actively about the freshness of the food and the wholesomeness of it, or because that was just part of the hippie commune lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that was just their lifestyle. You know, his family's from South Carolina, so that was their, like, move out west and be free kind of movement.
So prior to embarking on this experiment, this 100 days of real food, what were you eating? What were you feeding your family? What were they eating?
You know, we were eating the typical standard American diet. I mean, definitely Kraft macaroni and cheese was part of that, boxed cereal. You know, I did cook. I've always loved to cook ever since I learned how after college, but I was using a lot of white flour and sugar and also a lot of packaged ingredients, so like cans of cream of mushroom soup. And, you know, when we'd have tacos, I'd buy like the little packet of seasonings, which I now know contains more maltodextrin, which is a highly, you know, refined additive made from corn, than it does actual spices. So, you know, the meals that I would make are not really all that different than what I make now. I just use much higher quality ingredients.
Yeah, cream of mushroom soup was a staple when I was growing up.
Exactly.
It was in everything.
Yeah, and those Lipton onion soup mix packets.
And that's not good for you?
No. I mean,
because?
Well, if you look at the ingredients,
this is
just
Lipton we're talking about.
I know. They're just, and I actually, in my new book, I do have, you know, a knockoff homemade recipe for these things. So I'm not saying you have to give it up completely, but if you look at the ingredients, you see they're made from highly refined additives. And the crazy thing is that, you know, I started to change my family's diet because I thought, again, it just made sense and it just seemed like the right thing to do. But we experience a lot of changes in our health as a result. And I mean, that sent me the biggest message out of everything.
And yet you do talk about, in spite of the fact that you were serving and eating this typical American diet, which contained all these packaged foods that people buy in the grocery store for convenience sake, which actually tastes pretty good in some cases because they're made to taste
well,
good.
Because we didn't know any better. Our tastes have changed now.
Which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. You did, you say, have rules about certain things, like your kids loved hot dogs.
Yes.
And you would only serve them a hot dog once a week.
That's right.
With macaroni and cheese.
You did
once
your homework.
A week.
You did your homework. And I didn't really know why.
Where did that come from? Your parents?
I'm not so sure that was from them. I just thought, well, I know they like this and I'm sure it's fine, but I didn't feel right serving it to them more than once a week. I also, at a young age, had given up soda because of a health class speech when I was 12 years old, and they talked about, so I guess I was impressionable from a young age. I just didn't have all the information. So another example of that is I was not, you know, driving through McDonald's and some of the more notorious fast food restaurants. Now, I'm not saying that we didn't ever have fast food, but it was just less frequent than I guess probably the average American.
You are one of the evil meanies who went after Kraft Food about the food coloring in their macaroni and cheese. Now, we've had Vani Hari on this program,
yes,
who's the food babe, who was also on that team of people,
exactly,
who decided we need to go after Kraft and say, take this out, because they don't have that food coloring in the product in Britain, because Britain has different food laws, much more restrictive food laws.
That's right.
Than we have in the United States. What was wrong with that food coloring?
Well, the biggest issue I have with food dyes is that it provides no value at all. It is for cosmetic purposes only, yeah, and it does pose risks. So it's really just, do we need this macaroni and cheese to be neon orange, or could it be like maybe, you know, a little bit of a duller color and still taste the same?
But part of the appeal of food, aside from the taste, well, nutrition would come first, I suppose, but if it doesn't taste good, you're not going to eat it. And if it doesn't look good on the plate, it's not going to taste as good as it might, and you're not going to eat as much because it doesn't look good, and that's just not appetizing. I'm not putting that in my mouth. So what's wrong with dressing it up with a little color so it pops on the plate?
Well, the problem is that it can be done naturally. They can use naturally derived food dyes to accomplish the same goal without the health risk. It's just that it's a little more expensive for them and maybe a little more challenging for them to accomplish.
And what does it look like? I don't know if you've seen the British
version. Oh, yes, I have.
What does it look like?
It looks really similar. It looks surprisingly similar, and it actually...
Is it more expensive for them to make it that way in Britain than it is in the United States with the food coloring?
You know, I can't... That was a few years ago when we did the petition, so I'm not sure exactly what... I know the cost was similar. It was not dramatically different, but, you know, Kraft has since. They listen. They won't admit why they've made the change, but they have taken the artificial food dyes out of at least some of the boxes that are targeted towards children. So, and I, you know, I didn't see a dramatic change in price there. So it can be done.
Okay. Now, you grew up with parents who didn't pay much attention to what they were feeding their families in terms of reading the labels, because that just wasn't done in that time period. People didn't do it.
Exactly.
And you started out that way, and I grew up that way, and I grew up on Kraft macaroni and cheese with Ed Herlihy on television telling us how wonderful Kraft foods were. And here we are.
I know.
Having this conversation. So we survived. The argument could be made, how bad could this be if everybody grew up this way? And here we are.
Yeah, that's definitely a big argument. We are all fine. Well, I mean, if you look at the rates of obesity and other diet-related illnesses.
You're not fat.
I'm not fat. I know.
Oh, a little
but
bit.
there are other diet-related illnesses that are hard for us to see and measure, you know, like our chance for heart disease and our chance for different diseases like cancer. So, you know, again, I didn't set out to change my diet because I was trying to fix certain areas of my health. That never really even occurred to me because, again, I felt fine. I'm fit. I exercise. You know, I'm not overweight. But oddly enough, just shortly after we made these changes, I started to see some pretty dramatic changes in my youngest daughter. She struggled with constipation. I know it's not, you know, such a fun topic to discuss, but I think a lot of kids are on medication for this issue. And just within a matter of days, it's like a switch had flipped in her. I could not believe the difference. And she also struggled with asthma. And that is another, you know, chronic disease that studies show is related to the, or can be related to the food that we eat. And her asthma got so much better. She went from 5 back-to-back incidents of wheezing in 2009 to going the whole entire year of 2010 when we first made this change without any wheezing at all. So it was pretty dramatic.
That is dramatic.
Yeah.
What did you notice in yourself, in your husband, and your other daughter?
Well, in myself, what I noticed was an increase in energy. So those afternoon slumps that we all know too well, it's not that I never get them anymore, but it's just really rare.
To what do you attribute that? The lack of a lower amount of sugar? Because when you have a lot of sugar, you have a lot of energy, and then it just goes away almost instantly.
I think for me, the biggest, most dramatic changes were sugar and white flour. I mean, I hated whole grains before this. I didn't eat whole wheat bread because I didn't like it. So I had to buy the whole wheat loaf for my husband, which was still, at the time, because we didn't know any better, it was still pretty processed. But I bought white bread for myself. I only cooked with white flour, and I was definitely heavy-handed with the sugar. So I think those were the biggest changes for me, and I definitely had more energy. And surprisingly enough, I had my annual physical before we made these changes, and then I had one, you know, the following year. And after cutting out processed food, my good cholesterol, the number that you want to be high, went up by 50%, which is pretty dramatic. So you know, that greatly reduces my chance for heart disease.
And then you write about the fact that although before you made these changes, your husband had already refused to eat your homemade Aunt Jemima pancake.
Homemade, use that loosely.
With highly processed pancake syrup. I'm
That's
not sure
right.
what's in that syrup. But
it's high fructose corn syrup.
There you go.
And so I would have my bottle of table syrup, and he wanted, you know, the real maple syrup. But see, I grew up with the table syrup. That's the taste I was expecting. So we definitely had some differences in the kitchen.
So he knew something was going
on. Oh, yeah. He was, you know, he was definitely, it's almost like he was waiting for this to happen. And he likes to joke, you know, I've been trying to tell you this for years, but then you hear it on Oprah and now you wake up. So.
Well, the good news is you don't have to give up pancake because you have a pancake recipe in the book.
That's right.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this journey, this 100 days of real food, how difficult it was, how much more expensive, if at all it is, how much more time, if it does take, with our guest. Lisa Leake. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Ballet's Nutcracker, a holiday tradition with over 100 performers accompanied by the Charlotte Symphony, December 12th through 23rd at Belk Theater. Tickets at charlotteballet.org. And Bradley Arendt, Bolt Cummings LLP, a full-service law firm advising financial institutions and investors in all types of capital markets and lending transactions. Details at babc.com. Ask Dolly Parton, and she will tell you that the music she and her Nashville cohorts make has its roots in Celtic music, and that is why She wrote the foreword to Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr's new book, Wayfaring Strangers. It tells the stories of Scottish troubadours who crossed the sea and began making music in our part of the world, which gave rise to bluegrass and country. And Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr will be with us tomorrow at 9 to share more of the stories of that musical voyage tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama has called for the Internet to be regulated as a public utility. But some service providers are pushing back. Debate over fast lane pricing, how it could affect consumers, innovation, and U.S. global competitiveness.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Lisa Leek is our guest. She's a Matthews mom who embarked on an experiment a couple of years ago to see if she could make her family food that was real as opposed to processed for 100 days. And the result is a lot of attention and a cookbook, a New York Times best-selling cookbook called 100 Days of Real Food, How We Did It, What We Learned, and 100 Easy, Wholesome Recipes Your Family Will Love. By the way, she's part of the Charlotte Observer author event coming up on this 4th of December with a lot of local authors, including Kathy Reichs, our favorite novelist, from 11 to 2 at the Mint Museum. If you're joining us and listening and you have a Twitter account, those of you who tweet, have you tried to cut out processed foods at your house? What's worked? What hasn't worked for you? We'd like to hear from you about that. And our food blog, WFA Eats, explores food and culture in Charlotte, and you can check it out at WFAEats.org. So let's talk about this experiment, because before your blog, before your book, you have a blog about this, and before your blog, before your book, before you started on this 100-day experiment, you had some research to do, and some of it was reading those supermarket labels that you had never read before. How did you know what to look for? How did you know what was good, what was bad? How hard was this to do? Because I'm told that you and your husband went down every aisle in the supermarket and decided, I can take this, but I can't use this.
It was painful at first, and, you know, I'm not going to lie.
Did they stalk you? Did the manager of the store? What are you doing in here?
We spent a lot of time in the store at the beginning, and I'm not going to lie, the transition wasn't easy. Learning to read ingredient labels, I mean, the food industry does a good job of making it pretty tricky. So I felt like because of my husband's background, he probably, you know, knew a little more than I did at the time. We both had read Michael Pollan's book, In Defense of Food, but I still felt a little lost. So our children, who were 3 and 5 at the time, went with us, and we went to every single grocery store in the Charlotte area, like Harris Teeter, Trader Joe's, Earth Fair, and went up and down every aisle, and I would say to him, what can I buy on this aisle? So it was really difficult, and that is part of the reason why I started my blog, is because I worked so hard to figure out this information. I didn't have, you know, a resource at the time or really anybody to even ask how to do this. So I worked really hard to figure it out, and I wanted to put that information out there to share with others to make it easier for them.
How much time would you say you put into that? Because you had no book, you hadn't started the experiment yet. There was no payoff.
No,
contracted to do this.
Oh no, not at all.
It was just you motivating yourself.
Yeah, I just for some reason felt very compelled and felt passionate about this topic all of a sudden. I don't know what came over me, but I mean, I lost sleep at night those first few weeks thinking, what am I going to feed my kids if goldfish and fruit snacks are no longer options? And interesting enough, when we first developed this 100 Days Real Food Pledge and I told my friends about it, so many people thought we were going to starve. You know, they thought, what is there to eat if you can't eat anything out of a package with more than 5 ingredients? So it was definitely...
And that no more than 5 ingredients, I believe, comes from Michael Pollan.
Yes, we definitely borrowed that rule from him. So we define real food as anything with 5 or less whole ingredients. And
that mean whole?
So basically, you have to avoid all refined grains, so no white flour, no white rice, and all refined sweeteners. That means no sugar. So my kids went
no sugar at all.
No refined sugar. So
what would a source of unrefined?
So we decided that we would only use the most natural sweeteners, which are honey and pure maple syrup, because even though they are still technically a sugar, they do have some trace nutrients.
What about turbinado sugar? That's unrefined.
You know, you can really like go down the rabbit hole with all these different sugars and raw sugars. And, you know, so we just stuck with honey and pure maple syrup. And part of the reason is because you don't find those in packaged foods as often. So that meant if we were going to have something sweet, we'd have to make it ourselves
from
scratch.
But what you do find in packaged foods, and I think almost every food out there, is corn syrup.
Yes, exactly.
So what can you buy that doesn't have that in it?
Well, not a lot. I mean, there are definitely, if you go to the health food store, that you don't see that as often. But, you know, the goal with our experiment was to make things from scratch. So not to rely on really very many packaged foods at all. Although when it comes to crackers and pasta, I mean, we still do buy some key things from the middle of the grocery store.
The middle. You don't do the edges?
Well, we mostly do. Of course, the ideal way to shop is around the edge, around the perimeter. But I'm saying that we don't completely avoid the middle aisles of the store. We do buy some things still.
Now, you have kids, and you had been allowing your children to have those hot dogs and pretzels as snacks and other snack foods. Suddenly, these things off the list.
Yes.
So how did they react?
Well, they were 3 and 5 at the time, so I think it was probably a little over my younger daughter's head, but I'm not going to lie. I told them we were going to do this experiment, and if they, you know, cooperated, and of course I explained why we were doing it. It's for our health, and I think most kids want to do the right thing. They want mommy and daddy to be healthy and to live longer, but I told them when we were done, I would take them to Carowinds. So there was a little bribery involved, and we did. So anyway, they, you know, I... When kids are that little, the majority of what they eat is what you as a parent provides them. So I was pretty much in control. And what I did during our pledge, because we followed our real food rules during the pledge, whether we were traveling or out to eat or at a birthday party or at a friend's house, I would call ahead to the birthday party mom and say, you know, what are you serving? And she would tell me pizza, cupcakes, you know, and whatever. And I would, during our pledge, prepare something, you know, that follows our real food rules that I could bring that would be similar, just as probably moms do with kids that have food allergies. So that's how we survived that period.
But your kids didn't have food allergies.
No.
And probably your friends knew that.
Oh, yeah. They thought I was, like... oh, yeah. My friends thought I was, had like, you know, really lost my mind. So thankfully, thankfully they're still around.
What about eating out? Because you said that eating out was, you said two things. You said that Charlotte is not exactly a food mecca, a good food, a real food mecca.
Nope. It's getting better.
And that eating out is difficult.
Yes, it was.
You have no idea what they put in
the food.
I
know. And so you have to start asking a lot of questions. And of course, the waiter or waitress doesn't usually know the answer. And then you hope they're not back there spitting in your food because you're being difficult. But it was interesting because one evening we were out late running errands and the kids were hungry. And we thought, well, let's stop at P.F. Chang's. I mean, it smells so good from the street. And we used to eat there with no problem. But once we started asking questions, we learned that like 99% of their sauces have sugar in them, which was something we were not eating during our pledge. So we ended up having to order like plain brown rice, which they did have, and very plain, you know, other side dishes. And it was not very good
in the
end.
Well, in truth, isn't that the option? I mean, if you take all the things that they put in food to make it delicious to the American mm-hmm. palate and what we have become accustomed to expecting.
Yeah, lots of sugar.
And mm-hmm. you take all of that out. And you take the coloring out, you end up with a plate of plain brown rice.
No, not necessarily. In that particular instance,
anywhere.
Yes, but
you end up with a steamed piece of fish.
Not at my house.
And a bowl of steamed rice.
Yeah.
And maybe you can put some pepper on it.
Yeah, but there's so many things that you could use, like fresh herbs and spices. And I mean, and again, I set out to, you know, make wholesome, good food. And what we have learned, it's actually was really surprising, is that this fresh tasting made from scratch food is actually so much better than those processed sauces and other things that you find. So one of the other changes, I guess you could call it a change in health, sort of, is a change in palate. You know, my husband and I, we don't need to put as much salt or sugar in our food as the packaged stuff. And friends will say to me, oh, you know, you can't have that Oreo. But what they don't understand is I don't actually want it anymore because it tastes so processed to me. It doesn't taste good anymore. So we have come to love and actually prefer wholesome made from scratch food. I think it can be really good.
Now, this started out as, and let's be clear about this, as an experiment. There was an end in sight.
Yes.
100 days. And you, in fact, squirreled away some foods from your old life up in a corner of a cupboard someplace.
Yes.
So that when the 100 days of it were over, you could pull those Twinkies down and feast.
I did. Because it was important to get, you know, out of sight is out of mind.
Right.
It was important if we were going to succeed in this pledge to get all that junk out of my pantry. So I took our treat basket, which was full of like Halloween candy and, you know, anything like that. And I put it away in the guest room closet intending to just, I thought we'd just go back to normal after the 100 days or some kind of new normal. But about halfway through the pledge, I thought, why am I holding on to all this junk if we've survived this long without it and we are totally fine? I mean, we were so fine. So I actually went and got that big bag of candy and I hesitated a little bit because I do have a sweet tooth, but I threw the whole thing away and just said goodbye.
Do you ever cheat? Do you ever eat processed food? Do you
go
to a fast food restaurant? Do you ever, at Halloween, do you ever dip into the Halloween candy that somebody has brought home? Or we're about to approach Thanksgiving and Christmas, which I want to talk about. Do you ever, you know, you go out to eat with friends, you go to their homes, etc., and they've put a Mrs. Smith's pumpkin pie on the table, which probably never saw a pumpkin. I don't know.
Yeah. But that's a great question. So the 100-day pledge was all about following those strict rules for just a brief period because it helped us gain a new perspective, which was so valuable. But now that our pledge is over, I don't think anyone should live by strict rules for life. That's not any fun.
So you'll have a Coke. Okay.
No. Not I, you know, I do have certain standards that I still follow. So I never even liked Coke beforehand. So that's
Pepsi.
No. I didn't, I wasn't a soda drinker, but the way that things have changed now is that we eat mostly the real food because we want to, not because we have to, or, you know, this is our new normal and this is the way we do things at home, but for convenience sake, when we want to go out with friends or go to a friend's house or my kids are invited to a birthday party, I no longer pack up food and bring our versions of their dishes with us. I don't do that anymore. So also with, you know, with the kids, we kind of talk to them about, you know, that we can have a special treat, whatever they want, once a week. So it's amazing how...
What do they want?
Well, recently my older daughter, she loves donuts. She wanted to go to Krispy Kreme. So we did, and it was fine. And there's no guilt.
But if you make that a special treat, what does that say about what they're eating the other 7 days of the week?
And I have a lot of my blog readers bring up that topic. And a treat is really defined as something that's just not every day, not a regular occurrence. I call it a treat or a special treat because we just don't do it all the time, anything that's infrequent, really. So I do recognize that there is a social aspect to junk food as well, especially when it comes to the kids. I tell my husband, like, when it comes to things like the ice cream truck, we've been there, done that. So it's easy to say I'm you know, don't want anything from the ice cream truck, which I don't, but my kids haven't been there and done that. So I do occasionally let them get something from the ice cream truck, but not every time it comes down the street. You know, again, it's more of an occasional, a true occasional treat.
So let's talk about real food. You've defined it as food that has only five or less
whole ingredients.
Whole ingredients. Mm-hmm. So give me an example of what you can pick up off of the shelf at the grocery store that would be considered real food.
Well, when it comes to pasta, you can find one ingredient, 100% whole grain pasta at the grocery store. And you can also find, you know, tomato sauce that would fit these rules. Or you could buy, you know, a can of plain tomato sauce and then add your own seasonings and simmer it for a while to add some flavor at home.
Give me a brand name.
Well, there's a couple of organic ones. You know, honestly, I really like Earth Fair. They're not a sponsor of mine. I just do. And I buy a lot of their store brands. They have a good store brand organic line throughout the store.
Is organic important to you?
It is. It is. So I try to buy organic whenever I can. I know that's not realistic for everybody. I think that if you can't always buy organic, the Dirty Dozen list is a great resource. That shows you the top 12 produce items that have the most pesticide residue when they aren't organic.
Where do you get that list?
You can. It's through the Environmental Working Group. You can just Google. If you just Google Dirty Dozen list, you'll find. And I have a copy of it in my book as well. So I do try to buy organic. And, you know, some other products that I buy from the store, I'm just trying, of course, when you're on the spot about, I mean, I, I hit the produce department pretty heavily.
So essentially what you're saying is what you try to do is hit the outer
yes.
edge, the produce department. Do you buy frozen foods?
I buy frozen fruits and vegetables, which I think a lot of people aren't quite sure frozen or canned. They're usually picked and frozen at the peak of freshness. They're actually a great choice and affordable. So I do buy the frozen berries to make smoothies at home. And my kids love frozen peas. They'll just eat them straight out of the bag, thankfully. So okay. That's what I get in that aisle.
And then I would imagine that your spice rack is chock full of
stuff. Yes. I use loads of spices. And I actually have a list in my book as well of my most commonly used. So cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, cumin, lots of spices.
What about dairy? What about meat?
Those are good questions. So when it comes to dairy, we try to buy the least processed dairy that we can here in North Carolina. So, raw milk is not allowed for human consumption here.
Right.
So we buy a whole non-homogenized milk that's processed at a little lower temperature than some other standard milks that you'll see. They're like ultra high temperature pasteurized. And then for yogurt.
And you're not worried about what the result of that might be? Because they pasteurize it and homogenize it for a reason.
Well, it's still pasteurized. It's just at a little lower temperature. Because when you're pasteurizing it, you're killing, bad bacteria, but you're killing good bacteria too. So what I don't recall the temperature off the top of my head. I want to say like 160. But what we buy is, when you see some of the national brands, they're organic milk, and people wonder, well, why is the expiration date like 2 months from now? It's because they pasteurize it at such a high temperature. And again, you're killing bad bacteria, but you're killing some of the good stuff too. So that's kind of the middle ground that we've found with milk. And with yogurt, we look for plain whole milk yogurt that, has not been sweetened at all, and organic, of course. So I sweeten the yogurt and flavor it myself at home. We do like dairy. And then as far as meats go, I pretty much exclusively buy our meat from the Matthews Farmers Market. So I like to get locally raised meat. And that was one of our 100-day pledge rules.
Which brings up this question. How much more difficult has this made your life, both in terms of finding the ingredients and then preparing the ingredients, for 3 meals a day, 7 days a week?
Yes.
And how much more expensive is all of this?
Well, so as I, mentioned at the beginning of the interview, the transition at first was difficult. So I think just with anything, if you're moving to a new town or starting a new job, it just feels really more difficult at first. But now we have become used to this way of life, and this has become our new normal, and this is just how we do things. Now, that being said, I am in the kitchen a lot. I do have a lot of dirty dishes. We run our dishwasher twice a day, also partially because, when I pack my kids' lunches, I'd like to use reusable lunch boxes and thermoses. So when they come home from school, they pretty much, take up the whole counter with cleaning out their lunch box. But we do have a lot of dirty dishes, and I'm very upfront about that on my blog. It is more work, but it is worth it. You just have to prioritize what's important in your life. And to us, our health and eating wholesome, made from scratch food is a high priority.
But you have, I don't know how you have the time, because you do this blog and this has become a full-time job for you and your husband. But
yes.
But I'm curious as to where the time comes from. And what if you have two working parents?
Yeah, you just, there's a lot of things you can do on the weekend, and I think you can make it a family activity. So if you have little ones, get them in the kitchen, get them to help you. There are jobs that they can do. So it's all about planning ahead.
Lisa Leek is our guest. Her book is called 100 Days of Real Food. We'll do a little more exploring when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and North Carolina's Amtrak, offering travel to 16 North Carolina cities. Information on travel and tickets, visit ncbytrain.org. And the Charlotte Symphony, presenting Brahms' A German Requiem. Christopher Warren Green directs with the Oratorio Singers of Charlotte, Friday and Saturday at Belk Theater. Tickets at charlottesymphony.org. President Obama has called for the Internet to be regulated as a public utility. but some service providers are pushing back. So on the Diane Rehm Show, they will take a look at the debate over fast lane pricing and its possible effect on consumers, innovation, and U.S. global competitiveness. That's all coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you would like to talk about our what we're talking about today, and that is real food. Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org will get us to you, or get you to us, or get us on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Amy Poehler has always tried to balance her creative endeavors with a demanding career.
Creativity is like a warm, I picture it like a Hispanic woman who makes delicious food for me. And your career is like a bad boyfriend. And those two things are very separate.
I'm David Gura. Amy Poehler and Norman Lear discuss their lives and careers next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Lisa Leake is our guest. 100 Days of Real Food, How We Did It, What We Learned, and 100 Easy, Wholesome Recipes Your Family Will Love. That's the name of her book, which came out of an experiment that started several years ago to see if she could actually take her family down this path and stick to it for 100 days. And she has a food blog that talks about the same thing called 100daysofrealfood.com. We didn't get to talk about the budget.
Yes.
How much more expensive is this?
That's a great question. So when we did our initial 100-day pledge, that was like the number one response from my blog readers. You know, this all sounds great and lovely, but I can't afford it. So they challenged us to do another 100-day pledge on a budget, which we did, and I let my readers vote on how much we got to spend. And so for $125 a week, we, a family of four.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because some people think that is not very much money, and some people think that's actually a lot of money. So I guess it depends. It's all relative. But if you look at food stamps, which is now called the SNAP program, a family of four on full 100% food stamp benefits would actually get more than that. They'd get $167 a week. So I felt good about the number.
What were you spending before the $125
experiment? I didn't track it when we had made the switch to real food, because it was like that transition period. I felt like I needed that time to kind of figure out. I had to try all different kinds of crackers and all, to figure out what my new set of staples were going to be. So it was nothing I was actually really tracking that closely. And I mean, I'm a spender at heart. My husband's the one that's much better when it comes to budgeting. So this was a real challenge for me to stick to the $125. But, the moral of the story is that we didn't cave and buy anything processed. We never spent more than we were supposed to. I think with some creativity, it can be done.
Off the air a moment ago, you said a really good thing that people could do to eat. Just start. They don't have to commit to anything, is just go through their own pantry right now and start looking at the ingredients in the food.
Exactly. That doesn't mean that you're going to start making changes tomorrow. You're just going to start today being more aware, which I think is just a great place to start.
And you now tell people if they really want to try this to see, as you did, you tried it on for size to see if it could happen for you for 100 days. You don't recommend them doing it for 100 days.
Well, not necessarily. What I don't recommend is starting tomorrow. You need to prepare if you want to try to, sample this lifestyle. So you need to clean out your pantry. And, it's pretty hard to eat those powdered donuts if they aren't in the pantry. So you need to get rid of all the junk, and you need to start making some things. Like, one of my biggest secrets in doing this is I make foods in advance and I freeze them. So in my freezer, I've got homemade soups, homemade muffins, homemade waffles, and that helps me during a busy week, pull some foods out that I don't have to make day in and day out. So I think you just need to prepare before you start.
So you've created the convenience of those toaster waffles yourself.
Yes, I've made my own convenience food. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, we asked people who are on Twitter to tell us if they tried to cut out processed foods in their homes and what's worked, what hasn't worked. Bart on Twitter writes, I have lost 35 pounds after 5 years of strictly staying on Lisa's plan.
Oh, wow. Great. Congratulations.
It becomes easy after a year of good habits. Great work for today's world. Sarah on Facebook, where do you get your meats and eggs during the off season of the Matthews Farmers Market?
Well, Matthews Farmers Market is now all winter long, but that goes back to freezing. Like I said a moment ago, pretty much all their meats are sold frozen.
And did you go out and buy a big freezer for the garage?
You know, Michael Pollan recommended it in his book, and we did. We did buy an extra freezer, and I it's full. I mean, I use it all the time. So when you find a good source for meat, you can stock up and have it in there whenever you need it.
How long can you keep meat in the freezer before it starts to getting
nasty? Like 6 months or a year. Okay. Yeah, a while.
You write in your book, as Michael Pollan did, about the advantages of whole grains. You've already mentioned that on the air. And the disadvantages of all the salt and sugar and oils.
Mm-hmm. Refined oils,
that are in mainline food, manufacturers, packaged food, I guess. Far more than you would put in things made from scratch, all of these ingredients. But you say that artificial ingredients are at the top of your personal list
they
of
are.
Items to avoid. Why?
I feel like that's just a big experiment. You know, I try to eat traditional foods that our ancestors have survived on for centuries before us. And these artificial ingredients, they're, you know, derived in a lab using, you know, very questionable additives. And I just don't think we have a lot of long-term studies on the impact those have on our health. And I just also think they're not necessary. So again, with the artificial dyes, they don't change the taste of the food or the nutritional value of the food at all. They are just there for cosmetic purposes.
But artificial flavorings do.
Yes. And and that goes back to those Oreos I was talking about earlier. I'm not sure off the top of my head if they have artificial flavorings. They probably do. But
there are these fruit juices that are – no, there's no fruit in them at all.
Yes. And that doesn't taste good to me anymore. And I think, you know, they're tricking your senses with those artificial ingredients. It cracks me up when I like Quaker, for example, which I think has somewhat of a wholesome reputation. I'm not sure why anymore. But they have their flavored oatmeal packets. And I was looking at the strawberries and cream version one day, and come to find out, those little chunks of fruit in there aren't even strawberries. They're dried apple pieces that are artificially flavored and artificially dyed to trick you into thinking they're strawberries. So I just think it's not necessary and risky to eat.
David in Denver says, can your guest comment on the way that the processed foods industry has captured the public school lunchroom and how that programs children's palates to desire the products that they will later consume as adults?
Yeah, I think the lunchroom is tricky because from school to school, it varies so much. I mean, we have some lunchrooms in our country that are doing a pretty good job and cooking from scratch and using local ingredients. And then we have others that have a lot to be desired. I think that, you know, it's really important to start at home. And if your kids are used to those types of wholesome foods at home, then they'll be more open to it at school. And I think for any parent that feels like something is lacking in their school, they've got to get involved. I mean, that is really the answer. You can't just complain behind the scenes. You got to stand up. And I am sure there are other parents who feel like you do.
Well, David goes on to say that when I was a school kid 40 plus years ago, the lunchroom ladies cooked real food for students every day, served it up in the lunchroom. Now, many, perhaps most school systems bring in mostly frozen prepared meats, meals. Worse, have them delivered by vendors, large commercial kitchens, heat them and serve them in the classroom. Plainly, there is a connection between this and the childhood obesity epidemic. I would also argue that when you were in the lunchroom 40 years ago, David, as was I, that there was a thing called the federal cheese program. They had all this cheese that they bought from farmers, and they foisted it on the school lunch program. There was cheese in everything.
Interesting. I didn't know that. But yes, all they do now in most cafeterias is just reheat food, which is unfortunate. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement there.
Carol on Facebook writes, I love sweets, capitalized, by the way. How do I square that with your eating program?
Well, I have a huge sweet tooth, so that was really my first priority when we started the 100 Day Pledge, was to figure out how to make some more wholesome treats to satisfy my sweet tooth. And I was able to succeed eventually, and I do have some of those recipes in my cookbook, you know, where I'll use the honey and the pure maple syrup, knowing that that is, again, an occasional food to make cookies and chocolate desserts and things like that.
You have a chart in the book about artificial sweeteners, and I'm assuming I didn't read it all. I just looked at the chart that you don't like them, that you're leery of them. But what about stevia? That's a substance that is a real natural occurring substance?
Well, that's a good question. So the leaf, the stevia leaf itself, is very pure. And if you want to grow that in your herb garden and use that in your tea or other foods, you know, more power to you. But if you want to buy this powdered version, you know, in little packets off the grocery store shelf, I would be a little more concerned about the processing.
What about the liquid version that you just put little drops in your...
You know, I have not researched the liquid version in particular, but I'm definitely more skeptical because, as I mentioned, you know, I try to eat the traditional foods that have been around for centuries, and the way that's being used is a little bit newer, so I'm a little more skeptical.
Melanie emails, the whole chicken in the crock pot is the best ever to die for.
I'm so glad.
And then make stock out of the leftovers. I guess this comes from your book, is that right?
Yes, and that is such a great trick because you can make homemade chicken stock out of ingredients you would have just thrown away, the chicken carcass. So I love that recipe.
And she says it makes all soups 100 times better.
And it's better for you.
We're coming up on two major food holidays in America, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and there's food everywhere. There's food at parties. There's the table, the dining room table in many households literally creaks under the weight of the Thanksgiving meal. How do you handle situations like that, sticking to this diet?
Yeah, because I certainly don't want to offend any of our hosts or hostesses. So what I'll usually do, especially during the holidays when there are a lot of parties back to back, I'll usually eat a little something before I go. Just I don't want to show up starving because I don't know what's going to be offered. And I give the same advice to my girls. I try to eat a little bit of what I'm not sure about or that I know is not so good and a lot of what I do know is good. So if they've got a big salad or something that I know is more wholesome, I will get a lot of that and maybe a little bit of the casserole that I'm not quite sure what's in it kind of thing.
What about the turkey itself? Because, you know, some of these turkeys are injected with God knows what.
I know. I know. Well, I'm going to my brother's this year, and I already texted him. So are you going to get an organic turkey this year? So he's my brother. I can say whatever I want to him. But I am pretty particular about the meat that I eat. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've seen Food Inc., the documentary, but it's pretty eye-opening. And so, and I know Michael Pollan feels similarly about the meat that he eats. He's very particular about that as well. So usually if I don't know where the meat comes from or if I don't know if it's organic, I'll eat vegetarian.
You have kids. What do you do for snacks?
Well, I do try to, again, stock my freezer with homemade muffins. But, you know, there's other things like cheese sticks or
there's a lot of fat in a muffin. Isn't there a lot of oil and stuff like that?
Well, fat, it would depend. There's different types of fat. It's not all created equal. And I don't think fat is making us fat like once thought. I think it's more the refined sugar that is causing people issues. But I'll use, you know, some grass-fed organic butter in those muffins. And I am not scared of that type of fat at all. So, and I, you know, try not to overdo it. But I also really like them to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. I mean, if they're, you know, if I already give them an after-school snack and they tell me they're still hungry, I'm like, eat a carrot, eat an apple. You can have fruit or vegetable. And then sometimes they'll be like, well, I'm all right. Never mind. So,
is there a popcorn? Before I ask that question, they'll say, yeah, never mind. Because they don't want a fruit or vegetable. What is it about fruits kids don't like?
It's funny because my kids actually, they do like fruit and vegetables. And when I serve it on the dinner plate, and with breakfast, they will totally eat it. But it is funny. It's like, I don't know what they're pinning me down for. They want to get, you know, defrost yet another homemade waffle out of the freezer. But I'm like, no, that's, you've had enough. And then when I offer...
And that's carbohydrates.
Yeah. And, so, you know, but when I usually try to give like a balance. So if they're having the waffle for snack or breakfast, I always try to do like a fruit with it. But then if they finish that and I say, well, you can have a banana, you know, it's like, well, okay, I'll just go outside and play instead.
But isn't that a lot of, I mean, carbohydrates turn to sugar, and if you're going to add fruit to it, there's a lot of sugar in fruit. Aren't we just feeding these kids sugar?
Well, you know, I don't have a problem with the naturally occurring sugar that you find in fruits and vegetables because nature packages that naturally occurring sugar with the fiber and all the other stuff you need to...
How do you know this? You're not a dietitian. You're not a nutritionist. You're not a medical doctor. How do you know all this?
Well, I mean, I have done a lot of research. And also the questions I do get from blog readers, questions just like that, you know, are basically what get me to go on and do more research. So I feel like I have definitely done my homework.
How did you go from this experiment in your house and your neighbors thought you were crazy?
They definitely did.
To a blog which attracted 1 million people reading it, to this book deal with William Morrow, which is a major publisher. How did all this happen?
You know, it was not what I expected. I can definitely tell you that. I just, you know, wanted to blog about our 100 Days of Real Food experiment because I wanted to influence other people to make changes. I felt like there were other unsuspecting families out there similar to us before all of this. So I guess I struck a nerve, and I also think I was in the right place at the right time. People on their own are becoming more interested in cutting out processed food, and I'm providing them information to help with that. So the blog now gets over 4 million page views a month, which I can't believe. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's now our full-time family business, and it just seemed like the next natural step to put it into a book. So I honestly, if you told me this is where I'd be 5 years ago, I would have thought you were crazy. I would never have guessed this could happen.
On that blog, you help people ease into this kind of food consciousness. You have a plan for 14 weeks of real food. Week one starts with eating a minimum of two different fruits or vegetables with every breakfast, lunch, or dinner meal. Week two, you begin limiting beverages to coffee, tea, water, and milk with one cup of juice allowed for the week.
Yes, and that goes back to those naturally occurring sugars. When you take it out of the whole fruit, you know, it's not quite as ideal to eat. So that's why I don't love juice. But that's the mini pledge plan, and I think that not everyone's ready to jump in and do a 100-day pledge, or even we offer a 10 days of real food pledge as well. So that's when I realized people, they need baby steps. So I came up with those 14 weeks of, like, this is change one little thing at a time, and then by the end you'll have – learned quite a lot.
What about popcorn? I forgot to follow.
Oh, yeah, the popcorn. Oh, we love popcorn. And actually, that's to your snack question. It's a great snack. I actually make popcorn. I just take plain kernels and put them in a brown paper lunch bag and put it in my microwave, and then I season and flavor it myself. Have you tried that before?
No.
It's in the book, so okay. Check it out.
Cynthia emails, we're a family of six, live a lifestyle very much like your guests. Regarding the money, people think of the cost of purchasing organic or natural without factoring in how much they spend on eating out. That money can easily be reallocated to your groceries. I also have noticed that we waste less food as well. I appreciate my food more and how much it costs. And I guess you could argue that if you do this, it will save you on healthcare costs.
Absolutely. Ultimately. If you spend more on higher quality food now, you'll spend less on healthcare later.
Lisa Leek, author of 100 Days of Real Food. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you so much.